You are Locked On Orioles, your daily Baltimore Orioles podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey there, Orioles fans. Welcome back in to the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I am your host, Connor Newcomb. And on today's episode of the podcast, we are going to quickly recap the Orioles 7-5 win over the Marlins from last night, give you quickly the five things you need to know from that Orioles victory. Then we are going to have Eric Garfield on. He is a Orioles minor league writer over at Utah Street Report. And he lives down in the Sarasota and Twin Lakes area down in Florida, and he has been watching the Orioles in the Gulf Coast League at the spring training site for a long time and has been seeing and talking to people about what's been going on this spring as well. And he wrote a piece for Utah Street Report about some maybe, you know, underrated prospects he's excited about in 2021, so we're going to talk to Eric about those guys a little bit later. But first up, five things you need to know quickly here from the Orioles 7-5 win over the Marlins from Tuesday night to take game one of the quick two-game set down in Miami. Number one thing you need to know is Anthony Santander's injury. Of course, the Orioles finally got healthy for this game. Austin Hayes activated off the IL, sending Ryan McKenna back to the alternate site. Well, the O's might need to bring Ryan McKenna right back onto the active roster as soon as today, as it took the Orioles two batters with a full healthy roster of outfielders for the first time this season. All five of the guys healthy. Two batters in, Santander singles with one away. Pickoff attempt at first, goes back into first base awkwardly, twists his ankle, looked pretty bad. He had to get helped off the field, putting no pressure on that left ankle. The Orioles called it midway through the game a sprained ankle. Of course, that's, I'm assuming, without an MRI, so we will need more details on that. Hopefully it's just a sprain, not anything broken or anything worse than that, but Santander, definitely the way it looks, at the very least, probably headed for the 10-day injured list. Most likely we'll see McKenna back with the ball club, and it does open up a little bit more space for the Orioles to get all four of those other outfielders into the lineup every single day. Number two thing you need to know from last night's game, once again, Matt Harvey was not great. But he was solid, and he did enough to keep the Orioles in the ballgame and give them a chance to win a ballgame, which they did last night. Harvey's final line, he goes five innings, allowing three runs on eight hits, four strikeouts, and no walks in the ballgame. Now, the stuff was not amazing. He, you know, the fastball was right around 93. He did touch 95 a couple of times with the fastball, which he threw about 65% of the time. You know, 53 of his 82 pitches were that fastball, and you know, it looked pretty good. The slider was his best secondary pitch, 31% called strike and whiff percentage, but overall, just a 23% called strike and whiff percentage. Anything under 25 is a little concerning. He didn't have his best stuff really at all. He got out of a few jams, did give up a couple of runs in that fifth inning, but worked through it to get through five. And again, you know, it didn't look great. It was ugly at times. He gave up some hard hit balls that ended up being outs, but he did enough to help the Orioles win, and again, you know, he seems to continue to just get out of these starts, and, you know, they want him to be maybe a little bit better, but they'll take five innings and three runs from Matt Harvey at this point, at least it does seem, for the Orioles up to this point. Third thing you need to know from the Orioles win last night is that after Sean Armstrong, who was bad and couldn't throw a strike, the Orioles bullpen once again saved the day for the O's. Adam Pletko, inning and a third, scoreless. Tanner Scott, two outs, scoreless. Paul Fry, two outs, scoreless. Cesar Valdez, inning and a third, retires all four batters, three strikeouts, gets the save, and gets his ERA down to 0.96 on the season. I know Armstrong wasn't good. He walked the bases loaded and was taken out of the game without getting an out, but the rest of that bullpen able to do its job for the O's. Fourth thing you need to know from last night's game is that Trey Mancini starting to heat up for the Orioles. 2-for-4, he hit his fourth home run, a blast out the left center field, also drew a walk in the game, had a bloop single. Balls are starting to fall in a little bit more for him, and it's a great sign to see Trey Mancini really pull things back together here early in the season and start to get that swing going as we get into late April and May, as things really start to pick up here in 2021. And the fifth and final thing you need to know from last night's game, The end is looking sooner and sooner. I know we've talked about it, but looking sooner and sooner for Chance Sisko in an Oriole uniform. He goes 0-for-3 in the game, did not strike out, did actually reach base once because he was hit by a pitch, but still without a walk on the season. His batting average is down to 130. His OPS is down to 297. He really hurt Sean Armstrong in that sixth inning with a couple of frame jobs that just didn't look good. Couldn't steal a couple strikes from Matt Harvey, struggled again defensively behind the plate, another 0-for-3. And in his final at-bat of the game in the eighth inning, after Rio Ruiz had doubled, gone to third on a stolen base, and then Freddie Galvis had singled him home for a big insurance run, it made it 7-5 O's in the top of the eighth inning. Chance Sisko, eight-man, with the pitcher spot up next. Now, Ryan Mountcastle was ready to pinch hit, but still with the pitcher spot up next, Braden Hyde had the bunt on for Chance Sisko. First pitch, tries to bunt, pops it up for the out. Just a non-competitive AB on one pitch, and Sisko ends 0-for-3. The offense is gone. The defense is terrible. Seems like that end is closer and closer for Chance Sisko, but the Orioles do win the ballgame. 7-5 over the Marlins. Orioles now 8-9 on the season. And those are the five things you need to know from the Orioles' victory over the Marlins. But next up, as I mentioned at the top, Eric Garfield is going to join the pod. He is an Orioles minor league writer at Utah Street Report. Recently wrote an article about some of the prospects he is excited about watching in 2021. And they weren't, the Grayson Rodriguez's, the DL Halls, the Adley Rutschmans. They're guys who are mostly, even most of them, outside of the Orioles, general top 30 list in their system. Some deeper prospects who could maybe make a splash and still could get to the major leagues despite not being top 30 guys. We talk about a catcher who went undrafted and is pretty deep buried in the system in Chris Burgess. We talk about a former fifth-round pick in Lamar Sparks who has struggled with a lot of injuries in his time. He's finally fully healthy. We talk about some guys from the 2020 draft class and what they might be able to do. And we talk about an arm out of Vanderbilt in Reed Hayes, who is running it up to 100 miles an hour this offseason, and what he could do out of potentially the Bowie bullpen. So that is all coming up after this break with Eric Garfield, minor league writer for the Orioles at Utah Street Report. Again, that's coming up after the break. So we'll get to that Orioles prospects conversation with Eric in just a second, but first got to tell you about Built Bar. That's the new and improved Built Bar, which is even deliciouser. It's got those 18 amazing flavors with nuts and without nuts as well. But of course, we got to highlight those six new flavors: caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp. All the bars covered in 100% chocolate and soft and easy to chew. But the best part about Built Bars, they are great for the health-conscious person. You can lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. The bars are low-calorie, low-sugar, high in protein, and high in fiber. Just take a look at the Cherry Barcia bar. It's got 17 grams of protein, just 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, and 4 grams of net carbs. So if you want to get in on the act and get some of these delicious protein bars, go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKED15, and you'll get 15% off your next order. That's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. All right, so we welcome Eric Garfield into the podcast. He covers Orioles prospects over at Utah Street Report. And Eric, first of all, thank you so much for taking some time today to talk some O's prospects.
Always happy to do it. You're welcome.
And so just wanted to start by, giving you a chance to kind of let everybody know, you are, I think, a little closer to some of these prospects because you are down in the area in Florida. So kind of what does your, scouting and watching these guys kind of look like, in the off season and then, once the regular season starts for the minor leagues as well?
Under normal non-COVID circumstances, I go to both of their minor league complexes in Sarasota and Twin Lakes, watch the practices, watch the drills, watch the intra-squad games. So usually I have a very close perspective, and I've been making friends with coaches, trainers, and players. So this year, now that I don't have that access, really nobody does, I kind of have to talk to them and hear what's going on without seeing it in person. That's a little frustrating for me. I just like to see it myself, but a lot of good information, a lot of very positive things are happening for development, despite the fact that nobody can really see them right now.
Right, and it's got to make everybody's job kind of tougher down there. But you wrote a piece just about prospects you're excited about at Utah Street Report last week, and you kind of keyed in, you know, on a lot of guys that maybe some Orioles fans may not know about because, you know, they are not the top 30 guys. They are not the Grayson Rodriguez's and the Adley Rutschmans of the world. But these are still important guys for the depth of the system and could be, you know, some gems that the Orioles found. So, you know, if you listeners out there want to read that piece over at Utah Street Report, go do it. A lot of good breakdowns on a lot of players. But I wanted to focus on three of them with you today. And I wanted to start with Chris Burgess, who is a catcher who the Orioles signed as a minor league free agent, a small school guy who has been in their system for a couple years now and, you know, has only been at the Gulf Coast League. I feel like he's a guy who, you know, kind of off the field, we've seen kind of like all over Instagram with other Orioles players and have seen a lot of his work from this offseason. So, you know, where do you think Chris Burgess fits in and why did you include him in this list?
I think probably if you look at the whole system, the position with the best depth and talent throughout is catcher. And Chris is kind of a linchpin, a big reason why I feel that way. On that Gulf Coast team, they won their league. The playoffs were canceled, but he was their 3-4 hitter. He was the defensive leader. He seems very advanced for someone in a league so young and not advanced, where some of the players are holding a professional bat for the first time. So he's extremely athletic from the crouch, standing up, very strong, very baseball savvy and intelligent. It just looks like, even though it was the lowest level of pro ball, it just looked like he was a great communicator. It sounded like he was a great communicator, very focused. So you look at the position, there's some real skill and real talent at all levels, but he seems to solidify a lot of things that I would look for in a catcher, not a developmental catcher, in a big league catcher for such a young age. So really, when I watched that team, there were a lot of pleasant surprises, but Burgess being the team leader, the vocal leader, and that middle of the lineup hitter was probably the biggest surprise. I'm so excited to see what he starts doing as far as development in 2021. Very, very excited.
Yeah, and in these rebuilds, you know, you don't just need, you know, a couple of your later round picks to hit. You need some of these guys like Burgess, who wasn't drafted, who played at two different very small schools in Georgia for his college baseball, to kind of at least work out and give you depth and maybe be a guy who could break out. And, you know, as you talked about, it seems like that could be the case. Now, kind of flipping to the other side of the coin, to a guy who was drafted fairly highly by the Orioles, and that is Lamar Sparks. He was their fifth round pick out of high school in Texas back in 2017. And, you know, we know, you know, kind of the Sparks story, you know, the injuries he has dealt with and lost his entire 2018 season. And despite being a 2017 pick, he has not made it past the Gulf Coast League yet. So, you know, it feels like Sparks is healthy this year and, you know, could finally advance, you know, maybe up to Delmarva this season. And, you know, the question is, what do you see in him? And, you know, with his age still being 22, do you think it could still be put all together there from Lamar Sparks?
I'll answer the second question first. I absolutely do. I don't think he's too old or his skills are at a point where they can't get much better. I think, you know, if he's healthy, if his body is good, then that's a huge positive, obviously. I think the thing that is holding his track back a bit is taking his natural athleticism and turning it into baseball skills and baseball movements. There's a lot of things on the baseball field that he really makes look very easy despite being so young, but there's some things where he just hasn't had a chance to compete against professional players. I think that right now, probably his defense is ahead of his offense because he's just a natural athlete that can get to places that some guys can't while the ball's in the air. At the plate, I haven't seen enough of him to make a good judgment. I just haven't seen a lot of lengthy plate appearances. I've seen him get on base, and I've seen him steal and go from first to third. it has yet to be seen what he can do in the batter's box, but the Orioles are rebuilding, and he's a piece. He was, like you said, a relatively high draft pick, so the book is most certainly not closed on Lamar Sparks, and this is the year where he's bringing some health to the table, so no reason to be optimistic about him, despite his age.
Yeah, I'm hoping we get to see him in Delmarva, see a full season, and see what he can do against a more consistent competition this year. But kind of the last guy I wanted to specifically highlight is a guy who we saw some improvement from this offseason and during the quarantine, and that is the right-handed pitcher, Reed Hayes. Now, he is 26 years old, but, you know, the one thing you look at from Reed Hayes is that, listen, he came from Vanderbilt. He was a 13th-round pick by the Orioles in 2017, and you always get excited about any arm coming out of Vanderbilt. And, you know, he had a pretty good finish to his 2019 season in Delmarva. And so, you know, here's Hayes, who is, you know, probably going to be a lot older than the guys he's going to be playing with this year. But he could get his chance potentially to make his jump here to Double A pretty quickly. So kind of what do you see in Hayes? Because I know he made a pretty good velocity jump this offseason.
What you said about him ending up at Bowie this year would definitely not surprise me. In fact, that's kind of my expectation. Yeah, he's a little bit older, but he has pedigree, and he has that dog. You know, he's a fighter, and he's a very aggressive pitcher. He has a very aggressive mentality, and he has a pretty decent arsenal. What I wrote about in the piece on Utah Street Report is it seems like now the thing that he's been working on since his time in the Orioles system is that variance between his heat and his off speed. And he can make the ball move, and he can make the ball drop, but he can throw it about 100, and he can throw it about 75. So for me, if I'm a hitter that's not guessing right, that's a single A or double A level hitter, and I'm wondering about where the ball is going to end up, you know, that 25 miles per hour difference is a lot to think about and a lot to have to react to very quickly. So if he can start using that as a weapon, I definitely see him as an effective bullpen piece in the minors, and maybe even more. 100 miles an hour is 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, everybody's going to perk up when they see that 100. He was kind of posting some videos this offseason and during quarantine about you know, getting excited with him touching 100, and I think that kind of got his name into a little bit more Orioles fans' heads. But the last thing I want to ask you, you know, you put at the end of this piece that you're just excited about every 2020 draft pick, and I think that falls in line with all of us. You know, we want to finally see these guys who didn't get to play, you know, that first, you know, half season, whether it be in the Gulf Coast League or at short season Aberdeen after the 2020 draft because the minor league season was canceled. And, you know, we know about Heston Kerstad and his struggles with his health to get on the field. And then we know that, you know, they've had some health issues with a couple of the high school guys they picked as well. But of all those 2020 draft guys, you know, who excites you the most about potentially seeing them in 2021?
Oh, that's a tough one. I guess I can't say a tie between Haskin, Mayo, and Westberg. I guess I would say Mayo, because I have seen him from several hundred feet away take batting practice at Ed Smith Stadium in Sarasota. He is a big person who has yet to grow into his frame, but when he makes connection, 430 feet is just not a difficult endeavor at all. So even though he has the longest way to go and Westberg looks like he's kind of close to scratching the surface, I'm more excited for the long-term investment in Mayo and what he'll end up being when he's in his early to mid-20s. I think the Orioles made a very, very smart late-round selection with him. So, Mayo.
Yeah, he's one of those guys, you know, they saved the money early so they could go sign him and keep him from going to college in a big-time program. But I got to say, to finish up, you know, Kobe Mayo, he's at third base. He's got that big body. He's got the power already. I think it's becoming hard for Orioles fans not to have Manny Machado creep into their mind. But with Kobe Mayo, I mean, it seems like they're hoping that if he can stick there, he is that next third baseman that can come up with a lot of pop. And I mean, even videos of him just hitting BP are exciting to watch.
Totally agree. A very big person and a very big frame to go into. Just imagine if the Orioles are creeping towards contention a couple seasons from now, and he's the, just like Manny was in 2014, you know, that team, if he's the addition that helps us, you know, get from the wild card to first place in the division, that would be extremely exciting. I know that's a lot of ifs, but we're rebuilding, so we can think about all that stuff down the road.
Well, Eric, thank you so much for joining the pod. I'm sure we'll have you on again to talk some Orioles minor leagues. You can follow Eric on Twitter at Eric_Birdland. Read his writing at Utah Street Report, where he will cover all things Orioles minors. And Eric, thanks again for joining the pod.
Anytime.
So we'll get back to the Orioles talk in just a second, but first got to tell you about betonline.ag. The fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Now we've got the NBA and the NHL in full swing. The Major League Baseball season is upon us. Also coming up, golf tournaments, horse racing, the tennis majors, and much, much more in the world of sports. But it's not just sports that you can bet on over at betonline.ag. They even cover award shows, TV shows, and reality TV. They've got real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and best of all, it's free to sign up. So head over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today, and you can receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit when you use the promo code LOCKEDON. Again, that is promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit over at betonline.ag. That's BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. So our thanks again to Eric Garfield, a Orioles minor league writer over at Utah Street Report, for joining the podcast to talk about some of the prospects he is excited about that are some of the maybe lesser known guys in the Orioles system. Of course, as Eric talked about, you know, he is in the Sarasota area, the Twin Lakes area, goes to the sites all the time, sees these players, sees the Gulf Coast League games. Hopefully he said that he will be able to get out to the Gulf Coast League games pretty much almost every day. And we will definitely have Eric back on this pod multiple times to talk about the Orioles guys down in the Gulf Coast League, especially because there'll be two teams down there this summer. But going to wrap up on the pod here, looking at game 2 of 2 between the Orioles and Marlins here. But first, got to tell you about an exciting new podcast and just coverage in general coming up on the Locked On Podcast Network. This year, the Locked On Podcast Network is partnering with the Draft Network to cover the NFL Draft live. Get insight and analysis from Locked On local experts and the Draft Network's national experts. Subscribe to the Locked On NFL YouTube page to watch live 3-day coverage of the NFL Draft from April 29th through May the 1st. And the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021, presented by Locked On and Odyssey, is happening now. Featuring analysis from NFL experts Michael Irvin, Jason Lockenfora, and Brian Baldinger. Our local experts for every team making trades and picking the next stars of their team. Search the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 on the new Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Odyssey is your audio home for all the sports, podcasts, music, and news that matters to you. That's AUDACY. So looking forward to game 2 of this series. Again, it is a 1:10 p.m. Eastern time start for the Orioles and the Marlins. Number 2 of 2, a quick 2-game set at a Lone Depot Park. It will be Bruce Zimmerman going for the Orioles against the exciting young left-hander Trevor Rogers for the Marlins. Rogers, frankly, has been the Marlins' best starting pitcher so far this year. He's been dynamite, good strikeout stuff. This is going to be definitely a matchup to watch out for Rogers against the Orioles offense, which obviously had a good night at the plate in game number 1, but Rogers has been on a different level this year. For Zimmerman, you know, he just got to continue to kind of chug along and get, you know, quality starts or close to quality starts. But what we will get to see for the first time is Bruce Zimmerman getting a chance to hit. Of course, as many of you know, I think we need a universal DH. Why are we watching hitters hit when they hit about, you know, 120 maybe across the board? It makes more teams bunt, which is not good for the product, which is hard to watch, which decreases run scoring. Why did I have to watch Matt Harvey hit? He's even an experienced hitter, you know, with all that time he spent with the Mets, almost 300 career plate appearances. And it's not like he was getting a hit or anything close to one in game 1 on Tuesday night. So why do I have to watch a guy like Bruce Zimmerman, who has never hit in the major leagues, try to hit in this game instead of having a DH? Now, for Zimmerman, you know, he will be hitting. He did do it a little bit, a very little bit in the Braves system. When he was in Double A with the Mississippi Braves in the Southern League in 2018, he got five at-bats. He actually had two hits that year. He had an RBI. He drew a walk. He did strike out twice, but he had a couple of singles. Good for Zimmerman. You kind of go back a little further into his college career, whether he was at Towson for the 2 years, then at Mount Olive College in North Carolina for 2 years. Didn't do any hitting in college. So besides those five plate appearances, or six plate appearances, excuse me, in 2018 at Double A, you got to go back to his high school time at Loyola Blakefield in the MIAA in Baltimore for his hitting experience. And got to shout out one of my good buddies, Stetson Cox, for the inside info on the Bruce Zimmerman hitting experience in high school. The two of them played together at Loyola. Said Bruce did hit when he pitched, and he would hit sometimes when he didn't pitch. But he was kind of a 7-8-9 hitter in the Loyola lineup, kind of hit the ball the other way as a lefty, not a whole lot of pop in the bat. So he was definitely a guy who was focused mostly on the pitching, even in high school, even though, you know, obviously a great athlete and could handle the bat and was in there for a pretty good team. So this is going to be something very, very new, not new, but something he hasn't done in a while for Bruce Zimmerman. And again, why don't we just get the universal DH? But I guess that is a conversation for another day. But we will be back on another day. That is tomorrow for an exciting episode here on the pod. Mark Ellis is going to join us. He is a contributing editor at Rotten Tomatoes, host of the Rotten Tomatoes Is Wrong podcast, reviewing movies, of course, but he is also from the area and grew up a diehard Orioles fan, going to plenty of games at Memorial Stadium and at Camden Yards as well. And Mark is going to join us on tomorrow's episode. We're going to do a little Orioles talk, talk about his favorite Orioles of the past, talk about the state of the rebuild, and then we're going to get into the best baseball movies of all time. He definitely has an interesting top five. I'll tell you right now, he's got some takes about Sandlot, and he did leave off my favorite baseball movie, Moneyball, out of his top five as well. We talk about that in a really fun episode with Mark Ellis tomorrow. But until then, this has been the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.